Welcome, everybody, to the Off-Speed Podcast, a rebranding of the Sportswear Wrap-Up. My name is Grace Leader. I am your host for the Off-Speed Podcast. We are back. We had a few episodes covering right through from the beginning of the NFL playoffs through to the Super Bowl. We're joined by Rob Cicerino. Very fun episode if you have not listened to that. But we are back with a bit of a different format, a bit of a rebrand, if you will. Rather than looking back at the week, we are going to be more so looking ahead, looking around the world of sports, different corners of the sports world, things that a lot of folks actually have requested online. But some of my favorite segments we did in the previous episodes of the show was when we talked with somebody who sort of gave us some insight into a show. Into a sport or a story that a more casual fan might not be fully aware of. Why is that area of sports interesting? Most notably, I think DJ LaBelle Klein, aka Troy, came on to chat about the Olympics, give us some insight into what we should be watching. Ariel was very graciously came on to chat about tennis. Puya came on to talk about English soccer, Premier League soccer. So that is going to be the new format of the show. We will dive into a sports story or a specific sport and chat about what is going on in that world. We are going to be kicking that off this week by chatting about March Madness. I am very excited to chat about both the men's and women's tournaments. We have a guest for each of those segments. First up, we'll have Lindsay D'Arcangelo, writer for The Athletic, chat with us about what should we be watching in the women's tournament. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Zach Brooks of the Movie Ladder podcast to chat about the men's tournament. So that is the focus of the episode, as you might have seen in the episode title before you clicked play on this podcast. I'm very excited for you to be joining us and to join me each week as we dive into different worlds of sport. We, at the end of the show, we will play a game. Typically, that game will revolve around a sports story, a new story of the week. This week I'm covering the HBO show Winning Time. So I thought, with Zach Brooks and Brendan Fitzpatrick, both of the Movie Ladder podcast, would come on and we would play a game about sports, movies, and TV shows. So that is, this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a different guest. We will dive into a different world of sport and very excited to do that. But this is the new format. If you have a suggestion for either a topic, a story, or a guest that you think you'd like to hear on the show, please hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Hi From Grace. My DMs are open. You can chat with me. There's also the Inside Schmergen Brawl Facebook group, an offshoot of the Rob is a podcast Facebook group, unofficial. If you have suggestions in there, let me know. I am in there as well. So looking forward to the two sort of interviews that we have for you today and then a fun game at the end. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll be joined by Lindsay D'Arcangelo. Welcome back. We are going to be chatting about the Women's March Madness Tournament, and I am very fortunate to be joined by a special guest, writes about women's basketball and the WNBA for The Athletic and just women's sports, and is co-author of Hail Mary, The Rise and Fall of the National Women's Football League. I'm here with Lindsay D'Arcangelo. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you be joining here. I have followed you on Twitter for a long time. You are a wonderful advocate for women's sports, and I'm excited. We're doing a March Madness preview. We will talk about the men's tournament in a bit, but I feel like the men's tournament gets all the attention. So we're going to kick things off with the women's tournament.
That sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah, it's good. So I have to say, I'm a pretty casual, especially when it comes to college sports. I will say I'm a Canadian, Lindsay. So I'm a little bit, we do not have much of a college sports culture up here. So I feel like it's one of my big blind spots. But March Madness, every year we get excited about March Madness. But specifically the women's tournament, I would love for you to tell us what we should be excited about heading into this tournament this year.
Yeah, there's really nothing like college basketball in March. When you get into the tournament, getting into the tournament is just the start, and then it's you just got to win to stay in, pretty much. And the highlight is the single elimination games that happen throughout the first couple rounds of the tournament, and sort of getting it down to the 32 teams, and then the 16, and then the 8, and the final four, and then the championship, of course. But, you know, every game is exciting. There's so much pressure and drama, and you get to know athletes that you wouldn't have maybe paid attention to during the season because they're at a smaller school or a school that doesn't get as much attention.
Right.
And then to see them thrive on the big stage is a wonderful feeling. And then you have underdogs who pull upsets. I mean, you really get a mix of everything when you watch the NCAA tournament. So
there's so much basketball, right? Tournaments, I think, are a thing that I feel like American sports don't maybe have enough of. I'm a soccer fan, so I feel like we get tournaments the whole year round. But American sports feels like there's really just this, and then the World Cup sometimes. But
there's also the college atmosphere, which adds mm-hmm. to it. You know, because college fans are just so, it's passed down generation through generation. So there's
right.
just a generation of families and friends and alumni who just really throw their fandom towards their team and their alma mater, their school. And so it's everything's heightened. It's almost more drama and more excitement than you have in the NBA playoffs or the WNBA playoffs.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there with one game, right? If you're the fan of a team who, you know, is perhaps the underdog, you just need to win that one game. It's not like in the normal playoffs that we will watch where, you know, we'll have to win 4 out of 7 games. You know, this is a one and done. If we just pull out that victory, we can win. So very, very exciting. I guess we should start. One thing, there's an increase in the number of teams this year. They've matched the men's tournament. They're going up from 64 to 68. Do you see that having like a big impact on the tournament at all?
I don't think it'll have any huge impact other than just to have, you know, an extra opening round of more games, you know. So teams that maybe wouldn't have gotten an automatic bid or wouldn't have gotten just an at-large bid, which means their schedule and their wins and losses was good enough that the committee decided they should go and be a part of this tournament. So there's those extra slots, right?
Right.
And those teams will then, who get those 4 extra slots, play each other to get into the slot in the 64 team bracket.
Right.
So it adds a little bit more drama, you know. It's kind of an added bonus.
How big could we get, Lindsay? How many teams could we keep expanding the March Madness to?
I don't think it'll go much higher, to be honest. But I mean, the opening rounds, just getting it down from 64 to 32, the first couple days of the opening round, it's a lot. It's a lot of basketball. It's a lot of energy expended.
How do you cover something like that as a writer? How do you follow? Yeah, 32 games, right? How do you cover something like that?
Well, it's funny because for The Athletic this year, leading up to the tournament, I was asked to make predictions for every round.
Okay. Yes.
So once the brackets are finalized, selection Sunday is next Sunday. Then I will begin working on the matchups and picking which team. At first I was hesitant. I'm like, I don't know. People will be coming after me, you know, because the odds of getting it right, even if you're somebody who has paid attention and watched countless hours of basketball, you know, it's not an exact science. Unless you have like a number one team playing a 16 seed, you know, that's pretty much a given that the number one seed's going to win. But
right.
Once you get into those middle seeds, you know, it gets muddled. And some of these teams have never played each other coming from different conferences. So
right. It's
different matchups. But you watch the games pretty much leading up to the NCAA tournament. There's conference tournaments that happen
right.
to decide who's the winner of or who's the champion of each conference that gets an automatic bid. So you got to pay attention to that. And, you know, that could give you some knowledge of some teams that maybe you don't often see throughout the regular season. And then, you got to watch the games.
Right. That's a great piece of advice. You got to watch the games.
Yeah.
I'm again, the people who are tuning in and are big fans of college basketball and specifically the March Madness are going to be so mad at me. But the one thing when I was prepping for these podcasts, we're going to do to cover the women's and the men's tournament. And I thought, yeah, we'll do it a couple weeks out that, you know, won't be right before the tournament starts, or predictions, you know, or, you know, your prediction won't be immediately outdated, you know, after the first weekend. But the selection hasn't happened yet as we're recording this today. That's Selection Sunday. What is sort of what's the deal with Selection Sunday? Why does it take right before the tournament actually starts to be able to map out the bracket?
Well, because conference tournaments are still happening. You got to wait till, and they don't finish until next weekend. They don't finish till next Sunday. So Sunday night is when they'll have the selection show. I mean, there are people who do what's called bracketology, which is sort of project who they think is going to be in the tournament. And Charlie Cream of ESPN is a great follow to do that. Adam Johnson of NCAA.com does it as well. So you can check ahead of time and kind of see who's trending in the right direction and who's most likely going to get in, who may be some long shots, which we call on the bubble, who are maybe just a step from getting into the tournament. So end of the year, you know, it really, you're still counting regular season games. You're still weighing those wins and losses and ranked opponents and strength of schedule and all that. So it really banks right up until Selection Sunday.
Yeah, including that Sunday. That's wild. That's too bad. I was hoping to have you on the podcast. I was going to win my bracket this year because I was going to get all your predictions. I'll wait till after Selection Sunday and then copy your bracket.
See, now it's going to be, I'm going to think too much when I'm filling out my bracket. Now it's like I used to just, it's funny because I haven't paid attention to the men's game at all. Right. And I've watched one men's game all season, and it was Duke North Carolina on Saturday because I'm a huge Duke fan.
Okay.
And so when I'm filling out the men's bracket, I'm just going to be like, whatever. But yeah, with the women's and having, you know, I'm going to overthink it. You can't overthink it.
I am a huge overthinker, so I'm with you, Lindsay. This is gonna be tough. Let's dive into some of the stories, some of the things that you're sort of expecting from the tournament, and perhaps what people could be keeping an eye out for. As I said, there's a lot of basketball. I will imagine a lot of people watching will try to catch as much as they can, and maybe we can give them, based on your advice here, what they might want to keep an eye out for. So, I mean, let's start with who are the favorites to win the tournament, win the whole thing.
Well, I mean, I think South Carolina is the favorite. They've been the number one team all season. And they were just upset by Kentucky in the SEC tournament, which was kind of a shocker, especially because Kentucky wasn't well in the middle of the season. In fact, they were out of the tournament projections for last month. And then they just have gone on a win streak and ran through the SEC tournament and upset South Carolina. So, if you know, they're the number one overall seed, they're the top seed.
How much does it feel like that if they're sort of the favorite, they're the top seed, and yet they just had this sort of upset? I mean, they're 15-1. It's not like they're a bad team, but they did just considered an upset. Is there such thing as, like, you know, the momentum heading into the tournament? Is that a real thing?
Oh yeah, momentum's huge, and you could see that with Kentucky. You know, on the flip side of that, Kentucky has incredible momentum going in the NCAA tournament. Iowa is another team. It has a lot of momentum going into the tournament. So picking up momentum at this time of year is crucial. But, you know, I think with South Carolina, it's only going to steal them more. They're an exceptional team. They have length and size and talent, and they have a deep bench. I almost think losing before you get into the tournament is a good thing because, you know, it knocks you down a peg and makes you work that much harder. So we'll see. But they are the top overall seed, and then you have Stanford, who will be another number one, Louisville, who's projected to be another number one, and then NC State. So those are your four top seeds in each region.
South Carolina, you're picking them as sort of the favorite out of those top seeds. Who should we be paying attention to on South Carolina specifically, as someone who you know, fun to watch, or maybe multiple people who are fun to watch?
Yeah, I think South Carolina and Stanford really are the two that are expected to do, you know, make it to either the Final Four or the championship game. But on South Carolina, Leah Boston, she's without a doubt the player of the year, although Caitlin Clark of Iowa is also having a very good season. So I'd say those player of the year is between those two players. Aaliyah Boston's just, she's amazing. I mean, she's a walking double-double, which means she scores double digits and grabs double-digit rebounds consistently. Has done it in a row, I think, since, I want to say, for the past 23 games.
Wow.
Yeah, she's got she's just got all the intangibles. She's a definite WNBA prospect. Mm-hmm. She does everything. Blocks, steals, defense, offense, just a really incredible all-around player.
How much can a great performance in the March Madness tournament raise your stock sort of in the WNBA?
Incredibly.
Prospect?
Yeah. Incredibly, because you could be, like I said, at a smaller school or even a top school that just doesn't get a lot of attention and you know, just sort of be, you know, down the draft board a bit. But if you have a great tournament run and performance, your draft stock is going to shoot through the roof because everyone's paying attention. This is the time of year where everyone's watching, including WNBA scouts.
Right. Okay, yeah, we talked about South Carolina. Stanford was the other team. Who should we be paying attention to on Stanford?
Haley Jones. I think she won the MVP for the Pac-12 tournament for Stanford. They were the champions of the Pac-12. And Cameron Brink, also a great player. Stanford's just, it's another roster. And I think they have the length and size and bench depth to contend with South Carolina. So if they end up meeting in the tournament, that would be a great matchup to watch. But yeah, definitely Stanford's another good team.
All right. Yeah, I guess the thing I was saying before we were talking about South Carolina losing, it's not like you then have to like roll into the tournament and face some high seed team. Mm-hmm. They're still going to play the 16th seed, right? So can regain some of their momentum mm-hmm. as the tournament goes on. So those are sort of, we talked about the number one seeds. Who are the favorites to win? Any other exciting teams, perhaps teams that we think, you know, could pull some fun upsets in the tournament?
Well, so there's Kentucky, who I think, like I right. said, has the momentum on their side. Iowa as well, I already mentioned. Baylor, I think, is sort of flying under the radar. I think they have the potential to make the Final Four. LSU, Kim Mulkey, who was coaching at Baylor for years, left to go back to her hometown and take over the LSU program, and she has completely turned them around. In one season, it's incredible. She's my pick for coach of the year, in fact. So okay. LSU is another team. But if we're talking like further down, like if we're talking mid-major teams, which are from schools that aren't in one of the major, in a Power Five conference or one of the major conferences, Florida Gulf Coast University is a fun team to watch. They have mm-hmm. a player, Kirsten Bell, who declared for the WNBA draft.
The actor, Kirsten Bell? No, I'm just kidding.
Not Kirsten.
Okay, okay. Yes, got it.
But she is so fun to watch. And they just have a really high-powered offensive team. They take a lot of threes. So they're never quite out of the game. You know, they could get a lead very quickly. They can also come back from being down very quickly. I could see them upsetting some teams. BYU is a mid-major team that's ranked 15 overall in the top 25. I could see them doing pretty well. Princeton has a great defensive team. Mm-hmm. They could do some damage. Yeah.
What sort of ask a history question here, but like you know, in terms of like a real upset, what is like the actual viability of like a really low seed team? Like what is sort of their run? If you're ranked like pretty low in your division, what sort of like the most you could expect?
I don't think a 16 has ever beaten a one, ever, either on the men's or women's side. Right. I know it's happened on the men's side with a 15 and a 2 and a 14 and a 3. I'm not sure on the women's side. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I think it's more rare because we're still seeing the parity kind of spread in the women's basketball landscape. It's more like a 12-5 upset.
Right. 11-6. So you're going to gamble in your pool, in your bracket. That's where you want to get. Don't gamble on the 16 beating the one, but maybe the 15
beating the two. 8 and 9s are very close. 8 and 9 go anyway.
Right.
So
Speaking of the parity between these like higher ranked teams versus the lower ranked teams, what is it in women's college basketball that can lead to there to being such a disparity between these higher ranked seeds and the lower ranked teams?
Well, you know, programs with more clout and more have a more winning pedigree and history, though they get all the top players. If you're a high school recruit, are you going to want to go to UConn or University at Buffalo? And that's not a knock on UB because I live in Buffalo. So
okay. Yes.
I love the Bulls. I'm just, it was my example, but yeah, that's what it is. It's the top talent in the country going to like a small portion of schools. And UConn's one of them. Tennessee was for a long time. South Carolina is now there, but you're now seeing that talent being spread out further and further. And as that continues to happen, you're going to get more competitive programs and people elevating their visibility and status. And, you know, it's good for the game. It's good for women's basketball.
Right. So talked about the favorites, potentially some of the underdogs who could squeak out some wins here. What about, are there any just like exciting stories, players perhaps that we should be keeping an eye on throughout the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, there's players that have had really good seasons that you want to keep watching. Melissa Smith of Baylor, she's a senior. She's going to go to the WNBA this year. Caitlin Clark, who I mentioned of Iowa, is just, I mean, she could shoot from midcourt. I mean, she launches threes from the logos to the center of the court. She's an incredible shooter. You got Paige Beckers is back for UConn, who was out with an injury last year. She was the player of the year last year. Mm. And Ioka Lee for Kansas State is a center. I mean, she's basically their whole offense. What is she? She's like 6... I'm going to say 6'6". I don't know. She's
tall.
Huge. Tall. And she's another player who's fun to watch. We could go down the line where I could just pull players from different teams and say, you know, you want to pay attention to this. Naz Hillman of Michigan. Yeah. I mean, you get to know these players too, even if you're watching the tournament for the first time. You know, it's easy to figure it out and to zone in on who kind of you should be watching and paying attention to.
Very fun. I want to chat briefly before we go. You know, I joked up top, you know, we're covering the women's tournament and the men's tournament. And we're covering the women's tournament first here on the podcast. But there does seem to be such a huge disparity between the attention that the women's tournament gets and the men's tournament gets. And I think we could, you know, very clearly talk to all the reasons why that probably happens that many of us will know. But do you see the disparity between the coverage that they get? Like, is it changing? Is it moving in the right direction? What could maybe us as fans, what can we be doing to continue to support women's basketball and women's sports in general?
Well, that's easy. It's just watch.
Watch games. Yeah. You give really good advice. Watch games.
Watch the games. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
That's the easiest way. But yeah, there's been a disparity of coverage for years. And I think it really came to a head last year when we saw the disparity between amenities at the men's tournament and the women's tournament. Mm-hmm. And the players were tweeting about it. And there was a huge investigation and study done just about that disparity from a financial and marketing and promotion standpoint. I mean, the women's tournament wasn't even allowed to use the term March Madness until this year.
Is that true? This is the first year
it's being referred to it. Even though everyone else has always referred to that in promotional and marketing materials, it was reserved only for the men's tournament. Tell me why that makes sense. If you're trying to grow the women's side, it makes no sense. So what came out was that the NCAA wasn't really putting effort and investment in trying to grow the women's side or the women's tournament, even though the basketball that's played is just as exciting and just as entertaining.
Totally.
I think it's, you know, we've been on this constant upswing where women's basketball and women's sports in general are getting more attention, more investment. We're seeing that happen. WNBA just got a $75 million investment, but it's not anywhere near equal or where I feel like it needs to be.
Yeah. I do, you know, there's only so much we can do as fans, but there are, you know, things we can do. Yeah. Talk about the games on Twitter, watch the games on Twitter, try to watch, I think, you know, the women's tournament as much as you watch the men's tournament. All right. Anything else we should be paying attention to tournament this year? specifically the women's side?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. You know, there's a lot of great basketball coming our way once the tournament tips off. And, you know, I think aside from Stanford and South Carolina, those next two Final Four spots are pretty much wide open. So,
and Stanford won last year. That's correct.
Yeah.
So looking to repeat. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is great. Thanks so much. I think people get a lot out of this. Know where they should be watching. Do you have anything you'd like to promote, let people know about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm as you mentioned up top, I'm the author of Hail Mary, The Rise and Fall of the National Women's Football League from the 1970s. It's Women's History Month, so it's a great time to learn about this key piece of women's sports history in general. Not many people know that the NWFL existed. So if you want to learn more about that and the women who played, go grab the book.
Amazing. Thanks for joining. And this was great.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we are back. We are going to be chatting through the men's side of March Madness, and we have a very special guest. I'm very excited to be welcoming Zach Brooks. Zach, how are you doing?
Good. I'm really excited to make my debut on the RHAP Sports Podcast.
Yeah, very excited to have you. We chatted a few months back about you coming on. You're very excited for March Madness. As people have heard me say with Lindsay, I am Canadian and we do not have much of a college culture. I know March Madness is a thing and sometimes I fill out a bracket and sometimes I watch some games, but I'm very blind. So I'm excited for you to tell me and the audience what should we be keeping an eye out for the men's March Madness tournament.
Isn't Quinnipiac sometimes eligible for the March Madness
tournament? Canadian team?
I know that they play American teams sometimes.
Ooh, that would be great.
Yeah. You hear about Quinnipiac with poles a lot, but I think they also have a basketball team.
Seems like they might be, it seems like they might be in Connecticut, but I might be looking at the wrong thing.
Maybe there's, I thought there was a Canadian team that was, all right, whatever.
I've never heard of
that's a great start to this podcast.
No, so. That's okay. I feel like, I should be doing more yes anding. Like, yeah, great Canadian city of Quinnipiac.
Yes. It sounds like a Canadian city. Yeah, I'm super excited. We're a week away from March Madness and I am like, cannot wait.
Yeah, so we're doing this a little bit in advance. You know, I chatted with Lindsay. I was like, "What? The brackets isn't set. What is happening?" You know, we chatted a little bit about that. It's a little bit early, but we also didn't want to drop this like right before the games all start, and then immediately all of our the commentary is outdated. And to give people a little bit of time, for me, I think the idea here is like if I've never really delved into March Madness, what should I be watching? What should I keep an eye out for? What is interesting about these tournaments? And let me just start. Quickly to you, one thing I like to do on the sports show is like for the guest who comes on to tell me like, what is it about this thing that we're going to talk about? What is it about March Madness and college basketball in particular, Zach, that has made you a fan? How long have you been a fan? You know, give us your background.
I mean, I've been a college basketball fan as long as I can remember. So I am from Michigan and I'm a fan of Michigan State. That is the Spartans. That is not the Wolverines. Do not like the Wolverines. That's
okay.
Michigan. Michigan State won the NCAA title twice before. Once, if you're watching the show Winning Time on HBO, yes. Magic Johnson led Michigan State to the 1979 title.
Yes. I am watching Winning Time with Jason Reith every week on Puerto Rico.
I watched the first half of it right before we got on. And I got chills. At one point, they said the All-American point guard is going to go number one who led Michigan State to a title. And I literally got chills. And I was like, I texted a bunch of friends. I was like, can you believe this? They said that. That's so amazing.
Big story in the show is that he beat Larry Bird in the national championship.
Yep, so, big rivalry. Epic game. Unfortunately, I was not alive. Or fortunately, maybe. I was not alive for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, me either. So, yeah.
Not that old.
So you're a big Michigan State fan.
Yes, huge. I mean, people who know me or follow me on any social media platform like that. I'm slightly obsessed with both Michigan State basketball and football. And then they won again in 2000, led by another All-American, I think he was All-American, point guard Mateen Cleaves, who did not go number one. He did have a short pro career. He was drafted by a local pro team, but kind of didn't really pan out, but he was great in college.
That
was early in the career of our coach, Tom Izzo, who's now in his, I believe, 27th year. He's made 8 Final Fours in March Madness. So you can always count on Tom Izzo to make a run in March. Maybe not this year, but you never know. Don't count him out.
Well, I mean, this is what you're saying is that, you know, I was chatting with Lindsay about, you know, the, you know, why the bracket has not been set. I got educated. There are conference, you know, championships and things that need to be finished before we're done. And, you know, a lot up in the air. But as you were saying to me previously that, you know, there's, you know, a good, you know, I feel like in the men's side, at least, you know, there's so many divisions, there's so many teams. These conferences are going to determine who is going to be picked and make it into the tournament. You know, you could win your conference title, and now you're in the tournament. Now you're in March Madness.
Yeah. So there are, I just looked it up, 358 Division I men's basketball teams. Some of the conference tournaments have changed, but for the most part, and I will say the conference tournaments are kind of like the amuse-bouche to the men's March Madness bracket. Like, this is your appetizer, right? This is not the big dance, but these are, you know, 20, 25 little smaller regional dances, smaller 16 team tournament.
Zach, are you eating a amuse bouche before you're dancing? It can't be good for your stomach.
I mean, a amuse bouche is better than eating a big appetizer. That's just
that's
a little
true.
Taste before
that's
you dance.
True. Yeah. That's true. Yes.
So yes, this is your, I love that term, amuse bouche. So I like to use it whenever
I love can. It too. I do not mean to poke fun at your mixed metaphor. I actually enjoyed it. So.
Yeah. So yes, this is kind of the preamble to the tournament. If you win your conference title, and I know Lindsay might've gotten into this. If you win your conference tournament, you do get an automatic bid into the NCAA tournament. Yes. So essentially these are a whole bunch of play-in tournaments that are going on this weekend, the weekend of March 10th, March 11th, March 12th. Whatever this upcoming weekend is. And if you want to tune in, they're going to be all over on ESPN mostly, but I think Fox Sports is going to cover some CBS in Canada on different networks. I do not know what networks sports are on in Canada. TSN?
I think TSN covers some college basketball. I think that's who covers it in Canada.
Yes. Yeah. So if you want to get a little appetizer, start seeing some teams, check out the conference tournament. I think I'm a Big Ten fan, so I think the Big Ten conference tournament is going to be really good. I also think the SEC conference tournament, which just stands for the Southeastern Conference, that has, you know, Kentucky, Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Florida. It's a whole bunch of good teams playing in that conference. I think that should be really competitive. The Big 12 also should be a very competitive conference tournament. You can't go wrong watching these.
Are these just branded names, you know, Big 10, Big 12? Are these just like, are they actually the biggest schools or are they?
In fact, the Big 10 has 14 teams. So they're not even academic. They used to have 10 way back in the day. They used to have 10.
Oh my God. That hurts my brain. It's almost as much as how the Toronto Blue Jays have to play in the American League. Hurts my soul.
And some of these are regionally, divided, but there's been all kinds of movement over the last few years. So for example, not yet, but soon, the Southeastern Conference, the SEC, will include Texas and Oklahoma, which I don't know how familiar you are with American geography, but Texas and Oklahoma, not quite in the southeast of the United States.
Yeah, this is like, when you try to divide the country up by region,
there's different, like Texas and Oklahoma are rivals, and so they want to stay together, and they want to, it's mostly driven by football, these conferences, more so than basketball.
Interesting.
But not every team that plays Division I basketball plays Division I football.
Right. Lots of stuff to still set up before Selection Sunday, which will be a very exciting day as the bracket will actually be locked into place. I asked Lindsay, who is a journalist, so a little bit of a different approach, I think, to watching March Madness. Lindsay, looking at this from a journalist perspective, you are a fan. You are a fan of Michigan State. So I presume that you are, focusing in on when Michigan State should they be playing?
They will be in. There's a very slim possibility they wouldn't get selected, but it's like 99%.
Okay. All right. So we'll presume that Michigan stays in. I'm assuming you are making sure you're watching all of their games, but how do you decide what else you're going to watch? There's a lot of basketball at the beginning of March Madness. 34 games we have to get to. Actually, more than that, right? Because there's actually 68 teams.
I'll back up a little bit. There's two nights of play-in games. So there's going to be, eight teams competing? Is that right? So four games, two each night. I feel like my math is messed up, but there's...
That's okay. That's right. I think that looks right. Yeah.
Tuesday and Wednesday, there will be games. So that's why, like, immediately this podcast, if we would have... We would have to do this Sunday night and get this on Sunday night. So it's going to be the two games of the lowest-ranked 16 seeds. So these are your smaller schools that were automatic qualifiers, won their conference tournament. They're going to be basically cannon fodder for the number one seeds. Only once has a number 16 seed ever beaten a number one seed. And that was, oh, I'm blanking on the name. They beat Virginia, though.
Okay. That's sad that we only know the loser.
Oh, my God. Who was the this is going to bug me.
I'll look. I'll
people
look
are, talking, people are I'll listening look and yelling at their phones right now, listening to this.
It was Quinnipiac.
No, yeah, right, I'm just kidding. Yeah. There will be four 16 seeds competing for two spots.
University of Maryland.
UMBC, University of Maryland, Boston College.
Baltimore County.
Baltimore County. BC is
there
Boston
we go.
College. Yes.
That's okay. That's right. Yeah. So they're the only team to ever upset. This is in 2018. So pretty recent, actually.
Yeah. The year after that, Virginia went on to win the national title in the in March
that's
Madness,
a good comeback. Who's making that movie? Yeah. So how do you, we have the playing games. What are you prioritizing what to watch?
Yeah. So Thursday at noon, the tournament kicks off. Every year that I've not been in school, and when I was in school, in college, you're able to watch it. And when I grew up, they would even roll in the TV for the big March Madness games.
Oh, wow. We only got that for Olympic hockey.
Growing up in Michigan State country, that's kind of how it was. Ever since then, in my working life, I've always taken those days off. As soon as I am able to put in for time off, I put in for that Thursday and Friday. And sometimes I tell my coworkers why I'm taking the days off, but sometimes it's people are like, wait, you're taking 2 days off work to watch basketball? I'm like, yes, and leave me alone.
I've been there. I the upcoming Rob has a podcast, a live Know It Alls. I'm always like, can I trust you to tell you that I'm going to a live podcast?
It's always. I've also had to make that excuse and be like, I'm going to like a show in New York.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand it.
So a full day of games on the first Thursday and
Friday. And now with streaming, back when it was just on cable, you were at the mercy of what game was chosen for your area because it was on CBS and they would choose one game. And people who probably remember back then, like they used to, Survivor used to be on Thursday nights and they used to preempt Survivor for the NCAA tournament.
Oh, wow.
So not anymore.
I feel like the old school way to like watch is you have to go to a bar that had multiple TVs.
Yes, that had like a satellite package.
Yes,
that's now with streaming, and they have an agreement where there are four channels because at the most there will ever be four games on at a time. So it's on CBS, True TV, which is the hardest one to find, TNT, and TBS.
I only know True TV because they have Impractical Jokers.
I know True TV for 1 or 2 weeks a year. I think it's just this 1 week where everybody's like, "Wait, what channel is True TV on?" Because it's usually like. They used to play Court TV, I think, is what True TV is.
On the streaming packages, are you? I've been here with baseball, like opening day. I choose the thing where like I'm watching one game and I have all the other ones on the mini like picture in picture.
They don't have a great setup for that. There is a March Madness app that I've tried to use, but it's kind of delayed, so I don't do that. Usually, what I do is I set up three laptops and a TV, and I have each one on a different feed, and I just go to the like TNT website, TBS website, to load them all in. And then I just kind of put on the big screen the one I'm the most interested in. Of course, if it's Michigan State, that's getting the big screen and the majority. And it's usually, start off with one game and then an hour and you get the second game. So they're a little staggered. So you only have four games for like the meat of your day sandwich. And then at both ends, you just have a few games going on.
Right. So in the, are you looking at the number one seed saying, I would like to watch their game to get a sense of who they are, thinking that they will be, playing later in the tournament, playing perhaps more often? Or are you looking for these, like, where are the upsets going to come in the first round?
I mean, the fun is the upsets, of course, if it's not my team. When it's my team that gets upset, it's tragic.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
So the one seeds, I would say the 1 through 3 seeds, those games are sort of on the periphery for me. I'll have them on a screen.
Right.
And if things are interesting in the second half, then I might be like, oh, all right. Like, and you'll start seeing on Twitter, people will be like, I mean, I remember when Virginia was losing to UMBC, it was like, ooh.
Okay, we all got to switch over.
Yeah, like everybody's tweeting the eye emojis. Sure. I don't know if people used eye emojis back then, but it was
I'm a big eye emoji user.
And I don't know if people were using the eye emoji in 2018. That's a newer thing.
Sure.
So, and then people would start, would turn that on. That's when I'll tune into some of those lower seeds. The 215 happens a little bit more frequently. And then obviously, as you get lower in the seed.
Lindsay told us to keep the eye out on the 8-9 was Lindsay's.
Because 8-9 is essentially, it's essentially a toss up.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
So my Michigan State is projected to be an 8 right now. I've seen that a couple places.
Yes, I did.
The 5-12 is always an interesting one to watch for you. Oh. And there used to be a stat that like every year a 5 had lost to a 12. I don't know if that is still the case. I think that streak broke at one point, but
it's like the silly thing where they're like, you want to lose before, like actually sometimes a losing team, it lights a fire under them. But, I'm trying to think of another example. We're like, you know, it's actually good that we lost before we go, you know, it's actually good that we're not the number 5 seed before.
Yes, no,
I think just be the number 5 seed.
Sometimes that's the thing with the conference tournaments too, where you don't want to wear yourself out in these, if you already know you're in the NCAA tournament, you might be able to win a couple conference tournament games and enhance your seed and get a better seed in March Madness. But sometimes it's not worth playing 3 or 4 games in 4 days and risking your guys getting injured and running your legs super dry, because this is the tournament that matters less if you already know you're in March Madness. So
sometimes
you
like
see teams sort of dog these conference tournaments, and they'll still try to win, but not try that hard, because it's like, well, actually, we can get like almost a week of rest if we lose this.
But will that affect their seeding that much? Like, there's this the example I was thinking of that I couldn't come to mind earlier. I think the last few years there's been this thing with the Toronto Maple Leafs where it's like, we don't actually want to play Boston, so we'd actually rather be the 4th seed than the 3rd seed. You know, like let's try to like gamify who we're gonna get to play, and if we actually lose, we'll actually get a better matchup. And it's like, I guess so silly. Just try to like, I get resting your players. Mm-hmm. But there's a bad say. If you're automatically qualified, does losing this conference, is there any way that could affect your seeding in the tournament? Or
yeah, because the thing is with college sports, in you know, this is a bigger problem with college football, is it's so subjective. There's so many teams, you can't just take record like you can with pro sports,
right?
Because there's so many teams and there's so few games, and the teams haven't all played each other. So like college football, you might have a team that has not played a ton of tough competition, and this happens almost every year, where there's a smaller team that hasn't played a lot of hard teams. And they're 12-0, and it's like, well, should they be in the college football playoff?
Right,
because they haven't, you know, like UCF is an example of that. Boise State's an example of that.
Right.
Coastal Carolina, I think, was, I don't know if they went undefeated, but they did really well, for example, too.
Yeah,
and because these teams don't have the same measuring stick in college as you do in the pros, so March Madness is a very subjective. The NCAA tournament is a very subjective process where who they pick and how they seed. And so that's why it's always interesting to hear people react to the bracket. It's like, well, that team got snubbed. They should have been the 1 seed, or you know, they should have been in the tournament, and this team is in the tournament and this team isn't. And I can give you a list of some of the teams right now that are on the bubble heading into conference tournaments, because these are teams that do need to win their conference tournament, because right now their resume for getting in is sketchy. And if they lose in their conference tournament, they don't have chances to keep winning. Each conference tournament game is another chance to get another win. And you have a better record heading into March Madness. So
yeah, okay.
So these teams that are on the bubble right now, and some of this has changed because there's been some games today, but the last 4 byes, so these are the last 4 teams that will not be playing in those, this is according to ESPN, that will not be playing in those play-in games, which are the 12 seed, usually the 11 or 12 seed play-in games, not the 16 seeds, because those are automatic qualifiers. Wake Forest, Creighton, Memphis, and Michigan. So those are 4 teams to watch this weekend. If they lose early in their conference tournament, they might not make March Madness. I'm rooting for Michigan to lose early because they are a rival. But I think Michigan is in no matter what. Even if they lose, I don't think they're in. Last 4 in. So these are the very last 4. They're going to play in those, projected to play in those playing games. That's Xavier, Wyoming, Rutgers, and SMU.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just touch on a couple of these teams that are in, that like some interesting things about them real quick. So I believe Wake Forest just lost. I think I saw that they just lost today, so they might be in trouble. Memphis is an interesting one. So they're coached by Penny Hardaway, which if you're a fan of NBA and he played with Shaq.
Yeah.
They had an amazing recruiting class coming in, including a guy from Michigan named Amani Bates, who was said to be the next LeBron James, the next Kevin Durant. This guy, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated his freshman year of high school. He graduated high school a year early to come to college and play at Memphis. He has not panned out so far. He's actually not with the team. He is supposedly injured. But since he's been gone, the team has been really hot. And they have a couple other really young studs. And they're seemingly in after seeming like they were not going to make the tournament at all. Michigan is another team that started the season really, really poorly. They've turned things up. They beat Michigan State recently. They just won at Ohio State, who's a pretty good team. And they won it. They beat Purdue as well, who's going to be one of the top seeds. So I think they're in good shape to make it in. Rutgers is an interesting one. They're another Big mm-hmm. Ten team. They're one of the last four teams in. So Rutgers is not a historically great basketball program, and in both football and basketball, they're kind of a laughing stock for a long time. They have a really good, tough coach named Steve Peichel, and he came from Stony Brook, I think. And he just institutes like this tough nose, like very similar to Michigan State's brand of basketball, where they're all about defense and rebounding and playing hard and diving after loose balls. They play like that. They've got, they've got a whole bunch of players that have been with the team. They're now seniors or fifth year seniors, a lot of experience on that team. Suddenly in like late January, they just started beating all of the good teams in the Big Ten. They went on a run of beating three or four in a row, top 15 teams. And they've also lost to three of the worst teams in the country. They lost like Lafayette and a couple other really, really small schools. Terrible losses early on, great losses later on, or great wins later on. I'm rooting for them to make it in. I really hope they will, because they're a fun team to watch. And they have such a high variance. They could upset a number one seed, or they could lose their first game. So you have no idea what to expect with Rutgers.
Right. All right. So those are some of the teams on the bubble.
Can we get to some? I just want to do a couple on the outside looking in. So those are the teams that right now are projected to be in, assuming they don't have bad losses in their conference tournaments. Now there's teams that are on the outside, looking in. And these are teams that need to win some games this weekend in their conference tournament. Otherwise, they don't have the resume projected wise to make it in. So that would be historically great basketball program, Indiana.
Yeah,
they're also Big Ten. Right? Yeah, they are first year under a new coach. And they've probably outperformed what they were expected to do. But they play Michigan tomorrow. This podcast might be posted after, but 11 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday, they play Michigan. That almost, you could look at that as a play-in game. The winner of that is most likely in the NCAA tournament. The loser of that is going to be sweating on Sunday.
Right.
BYU, Dayton, Virginia Tech, Virginia, VCU. So three teams from Virginia, all hoping to get some wins in their conference tournaments. Florida and Texas A&M are all teams that are on the outside looking in.
Okay.
So Florida and Virginia both have won titles in the last 20 years. I mean, Virginia in 2018, Florida in 2008, I think, and 2009.
How does there become such a big disparity between you could go all the way and win it and then you could, you might not even be in the tournament?
There's so many factors, but I always think experience is a big deal. So with college sports, you have players that are 1 to 4, now 5 year players.
Yeah.
And when you come in as a freshman, you think about it, you're 17, 18 year old kid. Even if you're a freak athlete, you're still 17, 18 years old. You just don't have that kind of experience. After you've played 3 or 4 years in college basketball, especially if you're a point guard, you got the ball in your hand a lot. You're the one who's really running the show. If you have a lot of experience as a point guard, you're more likely to just have a feel for the game. And when things get hot and hairy during the game, you can make those quick decisions where, just like your first podcast, right? You might have had like a part where you stumbled over versus now you're a seasoned pro.
No, I was
now
perfect.
You're a
four-year
senior.
Right from the
back. Oh, look at you were Imani Bates. Yeah, you were the original. Yeah. So
no, don't go back. Robin Akiva Get Dragged, my first ever podcast. If you want to hear how bad.
Oh, really? Oh, that was your that was your first. That was your debut. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so these are the teams who are on the bubble, have to play in these conferences, hoping for some wins to improve their stock to get in. Let's flip the script. Let's go from the bottom to the top. Let's talk about maybe some of our number one seeds, the favorites to win the tournament. Who should we be watching out for, Zach?
So this is an interesting year in college basketball because a few weeks ago, if you're a big college basketball fan, you were probably watching this day. There was a Saturday where I think 8 of the top 10 teams got upset. And it's never happened that many. Michigan State beat Purdue that day. So we were actually one of the teams that they were at number 4 at the time when we beat them. But Gonzaga lost that day. Duke lost that day. Arizona, I believe Wisconsin also lost. I think was one of the Kansas was one of the teams. So huge upsets. And this year has been a lot of fluctuation at the top. Right now, the number one the projected number one seed, I believe, is Gonzaga.
We're using Joe Lenardi, who I believe Lindsay actually recommended as somebody you might want to follow. He's a really great page for both the men's and the women's tournament. His 2022 NCAA tournament bracketology, where he is going through a lot of this information. He currently has Gonzaga as number one seed, Baylor, Arizona, and Kansas all as his number one seeds at the moment.
And another one is Jerry Palm. He's with CBS. So he has a slightly different number one set of number one, so we can talk about that. Okay. If you're really into like the advanced analytics, there's a website called kenpom.com, which, you know, some people know that. They have just an analytics method of ranking teams, and it's usually way different than the national rankings because he uses some advanced stats to pull that. I think it's a subscription based for a lot of their features, but when you're filling out your brackets, if you really want to get an edge, if you use KenPom to pick, if you look at the two teams ranked in KenPom as you're filling out your bracket, and use that, it might not match up with the seed line always, but you might be able to spot some potential upsets.
Ooh, that's a good tip. I said I was just going to copy Lindsay's brackets, but now
I probably shouldn't give bracket advice. I watch so much college basketball, and I always finish near the bottom. Picking random, you know, because I'm like, oh yeah, that team's really good, but you know, I haven't watched Norfolk State, who are going to play in the first round, and then all of a sudden Norfolk State is really good.
One game, too. It's one game. Right? Anything can happen.
You can have an injury. Yeah. You can have a guy get nervous. I mean, a lot of times he's come down to the last shot. A guy's just shooting a free throw. These college kids get nervous shooting free throws.
The very reason I think it's so fun, the tournament style, one-and-done style of play.
The upsets are a little bit of a double-edged sword, though, I will say. It's really fun when a 15 beats a 2. Then the next round, the 15 has to go up against the 7 seed. Or the 10 seed, and all of a sudden they get crushed because that magic has run out. Sometimes they are actually an underseeded, really good team. Other times they just had a game where they couldn't miss. Yeah, and so these 15, you know, I remember when UMBC beat Virginia, they lost the next game. I didn't look at that set. Because there are some years where that Cinderella team, Gonzaga was a Cinderella. They were one of the first Cinderellas I can remember. And they turned that Cinderella run in March Madness into being the team that's now the, you know, 2 years in a row, the number one ranked team heading into March Madness.
Yeah. So out of
a really, really good program off
out of these
run.
Teams that are ranked really high, seeded really high, who are you excited about? Who would you, you know, it doesn't have to be a number one seed. Who are you sort of picking to win it all, Zach?
You know, I do not know who I'm picking to win it all. So I actually really like Purdue. Purdue historically flames out in the tournament under this coach. But they have a ton of talent. So part of me thinks like this is the year Purdue puts it together. They have and I know more of the Big Ten. So I'm sorry to talk more about Big Ten teams than other teams. But Purdue has a really, really good point guard who will be in the NBA next year named Jaden Ivey. They have a guy who is a 7-foot monster. He is like one of the biggest humans you've ever seen at center named Zach Edey. And then they have another guy who's a center who's not
Canadian. Zach Edey's a Canadian.
He's Canadian. Oh, nice. His name is Zach, and he's Canadian. He's like the combination of us.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah. And we're both 7 foot tall, so that's incredible.
Little did people know, you can't tell from the voices. They also have a big guy named Travion Williams, who is so good. He would start for most teams, but he comes off the bench because Zach Edey is this freak athlete. Somebody on a podcast the other day described him as a Game of Thrones giant, and I laughed.
Oh, wow.
That's
great.
So they got it. And then they have some good shooters and role players around. I do like Purdue, but I mean, honestly, Purdue could lose in the first round because their coach just chokes all the time. Kansas is always a solid pick as well. They got a guy named Abaji, who's been in college basketball for a while. He's got a lot of experience. He's really good. Another one, I think they'll probably be a 2 seed, is Kentucky. They probably need to win their conference tournament to bump up maybe to a 1 seed. They have a player who will go very high in the NBA draft next year, Oscar Tshiebwe. Just a dynamic athlete to watch. Whenever I watch Kentucky, he really sticks out to me. And I'm like, I'd love it if the Pistons would draft him. He's got a lot of talent.
Lindsay and I chat a little bit about a good March Madness showing can be, you know, bump up your draft stock, you know. High pressure games.
It can take guys who would not have been drafted and get them drafted. It can take guys, who were on the radar and get them bumped up into that, you know, because it's all this national exposure, right? I guess
the opposite is true, unfortunately. We don't want to talk about
What goes up, some have to come down. True. I mean, Gonzaga's not won the national title. Last year, they were heavy favorites. They were undefeated going into the national title game and lost to Baylor. We could definitely have a rematch between Gonzaga and Baylor, although both teams have had lots of changes at players, same coaches. They have a young player named Chet Holmgren who is very tall and lanky and skinny. Like he's like a weird, very weird looking basketball player because his arms and legs are so long and he seriously looks like he probably weighs the same amount as me. It's like, and he's more defensive player than offensive player, but then they have another number of other offensive players that are really good too. Baylor's strong defensively. Baylor's played really well, especially recently. They're on a 5-game winning streak. They're 14-4. They'll be a top seed. Even if they lose in their conference tournament, they should still be a number one seed. Maybe Kansas jumps them and takes their one seed spot if they lose to Kansas. And then another team I want to call out is Auburn as well. They probably have the number one pick on their team, Jabari Smith. I haven't watched Auburn too much, but I mean, they win a lot and they have a lot of talent and they have a pretty good coach. So,
okay. Yeah. Bracketology has them projected as the number two seed. Fun. Okay. So, I mean, those are like, you know, sort of top tier. But is there anybody lower seeded, lower down who you think, other than Michigan State, obviously, who,
right.
You
know, I would not, I mean, if people want to pick Michigan State, I love it. I hope that they do well. I've watched this team. I've gone to most of their home games this year. I've watched every one of their games, frustratingly so. They were in the top 10 for a lot of the year. They have lost a ton recently, which is the opposite of Michigan State. Usually gets better as the season goes on. This year they've gotten worse.
Okay.
This team is so inconsistent. I would be very, very surprised if they win more than one game in the tournament. Okay. But they could. You never know. Tom Izzo in March has magic.
That's good. So give us your, some of the lower seed, maybe someone who's a team who's lower or down. You certainly, perhaps not that like you're going to climb. Yeah, they're going to win it all. But perhaps could be a fun team to watch who's a little bit lower ranked than somebody.
So
like,
one team that probably will be higher ranked. I hope that they don't do that well, but there is a very, very important college basketball storyline surrounding them. That is Duke. So
Duke. I feel like when I was growing up, Duke was like the team. North Carolina.
Duke and North Carolina. North Carolina has not had a good season, but North Carolina will be in the tournament. Probably won't make much noise. But Duke is coached by Mike Krzyzewski. This is his final year. He's a legendary Hall of Fame coach. Has had great teams. This is his last season coaching. So it would be very poetic if he wins the title in his last year. And Duke has had a pretty good season. They're 26-5. So they've had a good season. But most notably, they had their final home game under Mike Krzyzewski last weekend playing against. Have you heard about this? Did you hear about
this? No, I have no idea where you're going.
This was incredible. So.
Maybe I did hear about this.
This blew up Twitter, basically.
So.
K's last game was last regular season game was against their heated rival, North Carolina, who's having a terrible season, barely is in the tournament. They're projected to win by, they're favored to win by like 15 points in this game. Everybody just assumes like they're going to blow North Carolina out of the water. But actually, North Carolina wins this game. North Carolina comes back, wins this game, spoils. They have all these festivities to send off Coach K for his final home game. It was great sports comedy. Like, if you like Schadenfreude, this is some good Schadenfreude for you.
Yes.
So he lost his last home game. He gave a speech after, and he was really, really upset, like really pissed about the game. It's just funny. Like, it was just great humor.
This was not the sports story I was thinking of. I was thinking of was there a punch thrown in a game recently?
We have to talk about that as well. So Duke could be like a storybook run. They have a lot of talent, but they've been a little bit inconsistent lately. But again, they've only lost 5 games all year.
Him losing his last home game and then going on to the March Madness and winning it is like, somebody will write that script. And
I mean,
movie will come out, right?
Unless you're
Duke, he's a bad guy.
He's the heel. He's Russell Hantz. He's the, I probably shouldn't say that name, but he's the heel here.
He's a Blue Devil.
Yes, exactly. His coach in waiting is an assistant. So the guy taking over next year is already on the bench. He's been an assistant. He's a former player for them. Now, what you were talking about a game between Michigan and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And there was some scuttle at the end of the game. Wisconsin was called a timeout because Michigan was still playing defense when the game was decided. The Michigan coach, former player for Michigan named Juwan Howard, did not approve of the coaching. Yes. And in the layup line, the Wisconsin coach tried to explain to him what happened and kind of grabbed his arm. I've watched the video a million times because, again, like Schadenfreude, I love him. He got mad at Greg Gard, the coach of Wisconsin, and basically threw a punch and started this whole brawl in the layup line or in the handshake line.
Yes. Yes. So, it got heated. Yeah.
Juwan Howard was suspended for the rest of the regular season. He will be back for the Big Ten tournament. So if you need another reason to watch Michigan and Indiana, I hope this gets posted by 11:30 a.m. tomorrow because
I think it'll be out in the morning, but I feel like most
otherwise read the box score. Yeah. If the game already happened, check out the box score. Yeah.
Or, see what happens. You know what? I always say I was telling Puyo a few weeks ago that I love English soccer because I don't search it enough, whatever. I can just throw on the game whenever I'm watching it. I don't get spoiled on it. It's like, if you could figure out a way to watch this game and you're not in college, but you could probably watch the game without being spoiled,
I have a moral, a moral.
You don't watch live.
I don't like, you gotta watch live. You know, no, you gotta watch live. You can't tape sports. It's already happened. It's also, I have friends that will be I'm gonna watch the MSU game later. And I actually have a friend who I will sometimes text about English soccer and he's like, spoilers. And I'm like, how am I supposed to know you're recording the Manchester United game?
The Zone. I watched the Champions League game after it happened today, so it was great. Yeah.
I don't watch a ton of soccer unless I bet on it. I do play in an indoor soccer league, which is on Thursday nights, which I will not be attending next week because I'll be watching March Madness. But
Taking a week off. Okay, so there's some
lower seeded teams.
Yeah, lower seeded teams. Yes.
Yeah. UCLA. That's an interesting one. They were projected number two, ranked number two preseason. They just have not quite had the season everybody expected. They have a ton of talent. They made a run to the Final Four last year and lost to Gonzaga. They actually beat Michigan State in one of those play-in games last year. They had a terrible season, barely made the tournament, and just got hot at the right time. So they've got that experience. They brought almost everybody back. So when I'm talking about experience, UCLA has that experience. They aren't relying on a lot of young players. They're, I think, projected to be a 4 seed right now. They could be one to make a little bit of a run. If they're the 4 seed, then they're going to end up playing. They'll play the 1 seed in the Sweet 16 if everything goes according to plan. So right now on the bracketology, where do we have UCLA playing? They would be playing Baylor in the Sweet 16. And also in Michigan State. This would be Baylor, Michigan State in the second round.
And Duke is in there. So that's
that could be a loaded division. One. I mean, it's going to shuffle a ton before Sunday, and these regions will shuffle out. Sure. So you can't put too much stock in these, but they're sort of fun to watch. Look for scenarios. Actually, a lot of the 4 seeds. Illinois is projected to be a 4 seed as well. Another really good team played very well in the regular season in the Big Ten. They have a really good big guy, a ton of big good guards. Their big guy is named Kofi Coburn, even though it is spelled in a way that does not sound pleasant.
I had a teacher named Mrs. Coburn, so
yes. Illinois is a fun one to watch. Again, they're projected to be a 4 seed. I could see them making a run. They would play potentially Kansas as the 1 seed that they could face. That's another team to watch. A team from the Southeastern Conference that I think has a great coach, a great young coach. What is his name? I'm breaking out his name now. They call him the Muss Bus, though, is his nickname. He's got a ton of Eric Musselman is his name.
Oh, what a great name.
And he acts like a muscle man.
Amazing.
They had a big win earlier this year and he took his shirt off and he's celebrating, running into the crowd and a professional wrestler, hyping them up.
The coach of Arkansas?
Yeah. Yes, he's the coach of Arkansas, and he brings that personality to his team, and his team plays with a ton of energy. So that's Arkansas. That's a team to watch out of the Southeastern Conference. And they might even win. They could win the SEC title this year or this weekend in the conference tournament. So definitely would watch them. Let's see who else is.
One more probably.
Marquette isn't. They're going to be a lower ranked team. I think they're projected to be an 8 or a 9 seed.
Yeah.
But they're one of those teams that's beaten good teams and lost to not great teams. So they have kind of that spotty record.
Interesting.
But if they can put it together, they're out of the Big East. I think Marquette's another one that I'm watching. I've also have made a lot of bets on Marquette and they've covered the games that I've won. I appreciate Marquette this year.
Okay. Yeah. Giving them the nod here at the.
Yeah. Loyola Chicago. One more is Loyola Chicago. They had a run last year. They beat Illinois. Their coach went to Oklahoma. Their new coach is a young coach. He's 30 years old. He's actually from Lansing, Michigan. His brother played for Michigan State. People say that the coach of Loyola, his name's Drew Valentine, may end up being the guy who takes over for Tom Izzo, depending on when Tom Izzo retires in 5 years or so.
Interesting.
That team also had a pretty good season, not as good as last year, but they have a lot of players back. So you might know them because they have a woman who is a nun with their school named Sister Jean. She's 103 years old. You'll see her in a wheelchair at the sidelines, and she goes to all their games. So if you look up Sister Jean, sort of like a human mascot for Loyola Chicago.
Wow, that's amazing.
People love Sister Jean.
Okay, yes. Sister Jean, amazing.
Yeah, people call her Sister Meme sometimes.
I was not expecting when I was like, Zach, you come on and like tell us who should we be keeping an eye out? And you were like, a nun.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm not sure if a nun is the correct. She's a sister. I'm not Catholic, so I couldn't tell you if that's
correct. Yeah. Apologies if we're incorrect. Yes.
If they're one of those 12 seeds, that 5-12 upset, look at Loyola Chicago, they could be one of those teams to upset.
All right. Okay, amazing. I think it's really, really fun. I guess we're going to play a game here in a bit, but before we wrap up the men's March Madness coverage, is there anything else that we need to know? Anything that we've missed?
Before next Thursday, figure out what channel True TV is or get the app for the True TV app.
That's right.
And, this only happens once a year. We didn't have it in 2020. Last year. Last year was a little bit different. All the games
no
were
fans
in
last year, right?
Yeah. No
fans
started having
or
fans
some fans.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All the games were in Indiana last year, which was kind of fun to have everybody. Now that's going to be back spread out all over. Like the regionals are in Philadelphia, Chicago, San Antonio, and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Final Four is in New Orleans. I would love it if Michigan State made the Final Four. I would try to go down to New Orleans.
That'd be great.
New Orleans, so
I also love New Orleans. I've been to New Orleans. It's very fun.
My favorite place. Yeah.
Okay. So that's our March Madness preview. Thanks so much for coming on, Zach. Okay, we're gonna let's jump into a game. You've invited a special guest. I like to have games. I do not like to pit people against each other. I like to have people play in teams. And you've picked a partner who I think is kind of a ringer for you.
We'll
have the great Brandon Fitzpatrick. Fitzy, how you doing?
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the Sports Wrap Up. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So, I was thinking, so the idea here at the end of each week now, we're going to play a game and it will be something related to something that's happening in the sports world. And I was racking my brain. There was a big trade, the other day. Russell Wilson was traded. I said, can I do a game about trades? And I thought, no way. I'm having the movie ladder people on. I have to do sports, movies, and TV shows.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do. Yeah.
Yes. Great idea.
So I have 5 questions prepared for you. And basically each question, you're going to have to sort of put things in order. I'm going to give you 4 things and you have to put them in the correct order. So we'll start off very, very easy. Easy to explain. It will be my first question is I need you to put these movies in order of the year they were released.
Oh,
okay. Okay. So we have, Dodgeball, a true underdog story. We have Whip It. The movie, it's the roller derby movie. And you can't even Google them.
My hands are up here. I'm not
Invincible. The movie with is it?
It's Matt Damon, right? Where he's the rugby player.
Where he's the eagle. Where he's That's I was thinking it was the one where he's.
Oh, I'm thinking of Invictus. Never mind.
Yeah,
I am thinking of Invincible, which is actually the it's the Mark Wahlberg movie. He plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, and then we have a movie that I put on here only for my own joy, which is called Men with Brooms, which is a Canadian curling movie. So these are your 4 movies. I'm going to give you again: Dodgeball, Whip It, Invincible, Men with Brooms.
I've never heard of.
Not covered any of these on the Movie Ladder podcast.
I thought we were just going to start with an easy one, Grace.
I'm giving you Movie Ladder suggestions. I'm giving you the easy rules question.
Yeah, this is a real ladder. All right, so I know Dodgeball came out when I was in college. So I think that's 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think it's 2005.
Yes. Invincible, I want to say it's like 2009. It's like right before I moved to DC and you and I lived together.
I feel like the roller derby one has to be the earliest.
Whip It?
Yeah.
Or the latest. Or it's like a random...
Sorry, I do want to apologize. I said Ellen Page before. It is Elliot Page. They go by Elliot Page.
Oh, it's okay. Yes. All right. I do know which one it is. And also, wasn't the guy from American Pie in that? Chris something? What is it?
Yeah, I believe
The tall guy? This is...
Yeah.
When was that? Yeah, I think that was before Dodgeball.
Yeah, he was in a lecture.
No, it would be after, because Elliot Page, their first big movie was Juno, which was like 2007. So that's going to be after Dodgeball. Yeah. So I would say Dodgeball, Whip It. Is that the name of the movie?
Yeah. Whip It. Yep.
And Whip It Good. And Invincible. And then I have no Men with Brooms.
You got to place this Canadian curling movie. Men with Brooms.
Let's go with that being the newest movie, because
I was going to go with the oldest movie. So of course,
curling blew up the last couple of years though from the Olympics.
I mean, in Canada, you probably have loved curling forever.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's from like 1953, and Grace is really just screwing with maybe us.
We're either going all the way at the. I feel like we should go all the way at the beginning, because I feel like if curling movie had come out anytime recently, we would have heard about it.
Go for it. Yeah. Okay. So
give me your order. Give me your
Robin Hood, Men with Brooms.
Yes.
Yes.
Dodgeball, Whip It, and Invincible. Don't Call Me Invictus.
So close. So Men with Brooms is the first movie. It was released in 2002. Dodgeball is the next movie. It was released in 2004, but I think maybe the end of the year. So very close. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Invincible comes out in 2006, and Whip It comes out in 2009. So you just had
Invincible was 2006. I did say 2009, but that was for Invincible, not for Whip It.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so cool. Not bad. You got a score of 2 there. You had 2 in the right position. That's pretty good.
All right.
We had 2 greens and 2 yellows. If you're playing,
Two cautions.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this one? Rank the TV shows in order of how many episodes they've aired. Okay. Ooh. So we have Ted Lasso,
okay,
The League, Ballers, and Eastbound and Down.
Okay. So Ted Lasso,
Ballers is gonna be the most.
No, Ballers was only like 3 or 4 seasons.
Ballers was 4 seasons and it was 12 episodes each, right?
But The League was, well, I think The League is gonna be the most.
The League is going to be the rush. You're right. You're right. Because that was 6.
I love The League. If people haven't watched The League, and you're looking for a funny show, I don't know how well the humor holds up, but The League is so funny and a great cast. So we're going most to least or least to most?
You can do, let's go least to most.
Least to most. Least is going to be Lasso. Because that's only been
Eastbound and Down.
Eastbound and Down. Yeah.
Eastbound and Down had 3 seasons.
Okay. Yep.
10 to 12 episodes each.
Yep. And then Ballers and then The League.
Yeah, so it's going to be Ted Lasso is the least because that's only had 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
One season was 9 and the other one was 8 or 9.
We just go by season. If we just go by season, so we had 2, 3, 4, 4 to 5. Yeah. And then The League was a bunch of seasons, but also 6. Was on FX. So it has more
episodes. It had more episodes per season than the average. So,
all right, give me your order.
Yeah, so we're going Ted Lasso with the fewest, then Eastbound and Down, then Ballers, then The League.
Oh, 4 for 4. I wish I had a bell.
Boom.
Oh, 4 greens. Look at that. There we go.
4 greens.
Or a ball.
All right. You ready for this one?
Grace, have you watched Ted Lasso?
I have watched Ted Lasso. Yes, I love Ted Lasso.
I know people love it. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's really great. Okay. I will say on this question, you can have clues if you would like, because I think this is the trickiest one I'm going to give you. Okay.
All right.
You have to put these. I'm going to give you the actor who played an athlete. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're all, they are all baseball players. And I need you
baseball movies.
I need you to the player that they are portraying. I need you to put them in the order of lowest to highest jersey number. let me get. So I have John Goodman. And I do you want me to tell you who they played?
Oh, that was Babe Ruth. It's Babe Ruth, and that's number 2.
Who did he play Babe Ruth in? What movie did he play Babe Ruth in?
Okay, and then we have Chadwick Boseman.
Yes. Right,
that's 42, because that's Jackie Robinson.
Thomas Jane, I think, is the trickiest person on the list. And then we have Ray Liotta. Yeah.
Ray Liotta played Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams. But what number was Shoeless Joe? Like number 12, something like that.
Okay. Yep. Okay. I the only one I know the number 4 is Jackie Robinson.
Both Thomas Jane in
The Punisher. He punished.
I know. Thomas Jane was in The Punisher. The Punisher didn't have a number. It was a skull. So
You know the number. You know the number that Babe Ruth had. Zach, surely you know the number Babe Ruth had.
It was number 2, right?
Close. When they were first giving out numbers, it's based on the position you played.
Oh, okay.
If that helps, it's a clue.
I actually never watched Babe Ruth play baseball.
Babe Ruth wore number 3.
I said I'd come on for college basketball. I did not say I would come on for baseball.
I was picturing the old-timey Yankees jersey in my head, and for some reason it looked like a 2.
Why don't we just go? So we have 2 So we know that's the beginning. We know, I would guess 42 is the end. Schuster Jackson is 12. So why don't we just place
Thomas Jane. What was he in?
He's in the movie 61.
Oh, well, maybe he plays.
Well, he's last. Maybe his number.
No, I think that was. That was a record.
He's Roger Maris, right?
Yeah.
Is it in Maris versus Mantle?
It is.
Sure.
61 is the movie of Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle on their quest to break Babe Ruth.
Who did he play, Maris or Mantle?
Mm. And what? I don't know either of their numbers. Mm. Do you?
Yeah.
No, I don't. But I think that they would both be before Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, I think so too. Because that's the biggest gap that
baseball.
We have.
Yeah, it's baseball.
So. All right, give me your.
Oh,
your
we have to remember this. So we have John Goodman.
John Goodman is as number three, Babe Ruth.
Don't need to give the numbers. We're just giving the order.
And then Ray Liotta, and then Thomas Jane, and then Chadwick.
Yes.
Wow, 4 for 4. And you did not exactly have the numbers right. So you did say, at one point, you did say Babe Ruth did wear number three. He wore number three. He was the first baseman, so he wore number three. Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe Jackson wore number five. Thomas Jane as Mickey Mantle wore number seven. Chadwick Boseman as Jackie Robinson wore number 42. All right. Rank these movies, and these are all boxing movies, from lowest to highest box office total.
Is this adjusted for inflation, or is this just what
this is made? Not adjusted for inflation.
Not adjusted.
We have inflation. The Fighter, Raging Bull, Rocky IV, and Southpaw. And I can Fighter.
Brennan and I went to Southpaw. Went to a screening of Southpaw. It was awful. Very bad. Do not recommend that one.
Fighter is a Christian Bale movie. Southpaw is Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal. Just watch a different movie. Maybe watch Streetcar Named Desire instead of that. If you need a recommendation.
So we have The Fighter, Raging Bull, Rocky IV, and Southpaw.
The Fighter was Oscar nominated for multiple Oscars, but I don't know how popular it was at the box office.
I still think it's probably the highest, to be honest.
You think?
Talking about not adjusted for inflation.
Not adjusting for inflation, it's probably The Fighter.
Rocky IV is, I don't know.
I'll tell you that I got these numbers off of the one great Wikipedia page. So if the numbers are incorrect,
the numbers are bad.
Numbers are bad. I think Raging Bull is probably second. That movie made a shit ton of money in 19. Sorry,
Brandon, It's a family podcast.
This is a family podcast. In 1980, that movie made a lot of money, won multiple Oscars, including a Best Picture nomination. Uh-huh. So I'm going to say Raging Bull is second behind The Fighter. Then probably, since we're not adjusting for inflation, Southpaw, then Rocky IV.
Rocky's a phenomenon, though.
Rocky is a phenomenon, but it was much more of a whole movie phenomenon.
I would go with Southpaw at the bottom. Like, who saw Southpaw besides us, and we didn't even pay to see it?
Fair enough.
So,
okay, we can do that.
So just to clarify, we're actually going highest to lowest. You think The Fighter is number one, Raging Bull is number two. Yep. You think Rocky IV is number three, and Southpaw is the lowest?
Lowest.
No, I don't think you have anything in the right order. So the highest grossing film is Rocky IV at $300.4 million. Which again, this could be like
it does sound made, adjusted for inflation. Though.
It has made, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, didn't Rocky IV just get re-released? Also,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The Fighter is number two at 129.2 million. Southpaw number three at 94 million, and Raging Bull made 23.4 million. That's what made me believe it's not adjusted for inflation. Raging Bull only made 23.4, but it could be didn't do well in the theaters and then was a cult classic.
Which Grace, if you had to pick one of those movies to watch tonight. Which of
those maybe probably The Fighter. I think the most interesting. Yeah. Who's in Rocky IV? Who's the bad guy?
I've never seen it, but there's a robot.
Dolph Lundgren. It's Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. Okay. It's the Russian. All right. Yeah. All right. Last question here. I need you to rank these movies for the number of Oscar nominations that they received. Okay. So we have The Blind Side, Moneyball, Jerry Maguire, and Million Dollar Baby.
Million Dollar Baby was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Morgan Freeman, Best Actress for Hilary Swank, and Screenplay. So, yeah, I mean, it's Million Dollar Baby. I think Million Dollar Baby is the highest. Moneyball was nominated for Uptown as well. including Best Adapted Screenplay, as well as Brad Pitt, I believe, was nominated. Philip Seymour Hoffman may have been nominated for his role as...
Yeah, I don't remember. But it was up for Best Picture. What were the other...
So we have Blindside, Moneyball, Jerry Maguire, Million Dollar Baby.
I think Jerry Maguire is probably the lowest. Well, I don't know.
Wasn't it nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah, and there were some acting nominations. I think all of these were nominated for Best Picture. Blindside is horrible. I don't think Blindside. I did not like the Blindside. Not good.
Bad. Sandra Bullock won, but I wonder if that was the only nomination that movie got.
Yeah, I think I would put that lowest. I think I would go blind if we're going lowest to highest, which I know we keep flipping our order.
That's
Blindside.
Okay.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Moneyball, Million Dollar Baby. Although I might flip Moneyball and Jerry Maguire. I think Moneyball is one that people came to after. I would say Moneyball is lower than Jerry Maguire.
Okay, we can do that.
Final answer?
Yep. Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, you had it right the first time.
Oh, I always trust
Zachary.
Yeah, that's okay. It's very close.
Always trust Fitzy.
Yeah, the Blindside had two nominations. Jerry Maguire had five, whereas Moneyball had six. Million Dollar Baby had seven nominations. You did pretty well there. That's again, as soon as you get one wrong, you have two wrong.
Right,
so,
happy.
Yeah, so I feel like getting half of them right.
I think make this game where you say you have two wrong, and then give us another chance to rearrange for half credit.
All right.
We probably screwed up, but you never know.
Well, when the two of you return from the reason why we did this game, I'm covering Winning Time over on Post Show Recaps, a TV show based on a real life sporting event of the Los Angeles Lakers in the 1980s. Two of you have your Movie Ladder podcast. So I thought it was a fitting week to play this game all about sports, movies, and TV. Thank you both for coming on. Tell us about the Movie Ladder podcast.
All right. So the Movie Ladder podcast is a weekly podcast that Brendan and I do. Every week we talk about a movie that connects to the movie we did the previous week. We're in our third year. We've done 115 episodes, I think.
Yeah, this will be our 115th episode coming up.
So, and the movies connect in any kind of way. We've done the same actors in two movies, or the same writer, or the same topic area. Even we did earlier this season, we did a whole bunch of movies that included something about the Beatles. We did Yesterday and
Across the Universe, we love having guests on, especially when Grace decides to grace us with Grace's presence.
I was on for the Way Back, I believe, and the week before you did the Way Back, which is the Ben Affleck basketball movie. So I feel like
Way Back
is the Ben Affleck movie. The Way Back, theme park movie.
Yeah. You get one wrong, you get both.
Yeah, you get two wrong. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then you were just on recently, weren't you?
Yeah, I was on for once
as well. Yes,
yeah,
which was a lot of fun.
And this week, Brendan and I did Streetcar Named Desire, which is a play turned movie written by Tennessee Williams, takes place in New Orleans. Very dramatic, very heavy. We do episodes every week. You can find us on Anchor and all podcast platforms, The Movie Ladder, where we share on our social media as well. And next week, we are not yet announcing what the movie is, but we always, at the end of the episode, take suggestions from the listeners, and then Brendan and I decide on a movie for next week that somehow connects. So next week will be a movie that somehow connects to
Streetcar Named Desire.
We will be talking. So if you listen to that podcast, you'll find out what movie it is, or on Fridays we announce that one.
Amazing. Fitzy, where can people find you on the internet if they want to follow what you're doing?
You can find me on Twitter at Fitzy Brennan, or on Instagram at Brent Fitzpatrick 11, or at Letterboxd at Fitzy Brennan as well. Love plugging my Letterboxd. It's probably my favorite movie catalog site out there.
It's the best. If you're a movie fan, you got to get on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Zach, what about you?
I'm at Brooks ZA on all platforms. I'm like Brendan. I keep consistency amongst all of my usernames. I'm also on Letterboxd, and Twitter's really the only other platform I use. As people are making their picks or watching conference tournaments, let me know what you're watching. Let me know if I didn't talk about your team and you're like, hey, Providence is actually very good. They were also very lucky this year. But if you're like, hey, I'm a Providence fan and you didn't talk about us at all, tell me why I should be picking you guys in March Madness, because I need bracket picks. I also need picks for gambling. So send me that.
That's right. Yeah, fun. Twitter. I am on Twitter at High From Grace, doing lots of stuff, mostly over on Post Show Recaps, covering Winning Time, Raised by Wolves, Our Flag Means Death. Yeah, and more to come. Movie coverage every week over on Post Show Recaps Theater as well. Thanks for joining us on our, you know, the newly launched sports show here, and we will be back next week. Until then, the podcast is over.